Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Light Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, for autumn semester 2022.
Today's lecture is relatively short. It's on accounting. Accounting is a subject that is not near and dear to my heart, but I have my fun with the jokes about it, but it is hugely important to all of business. It's not just these people that are in a dark room somewhere. They create the information products for different consumer constituencies that are needed in order to have a successful operation of a business. So I will talk to about them in relatively favorable terms, and this lecture will spill over into Monday, and we'll also do other things on Monday as well. So, and then we are having a quiz today. It will open at 4:30, and so you may get out early. It's a 10-minute quiz, so enjoy that time. And always on my quizzes, you can use your notes as you wish. And that's the time, of course, it's in ReggieNet. So even though computers are not supposed to be used unless you have an accommodation, obviously you have to use your computer for a quiz. And I'll talk more about that briefly here. But first things first, a look at the numbers. Hello, good time. Okay, now, just to start this out, bull or bear market?
Bull.
Bull. You say bull. You know, bull. Last week was a bear. The bears were just roaring. And this week, the bulls are snorting. It's just good. Now, again, as I keep emphasizing, it's not bad if it's a bear market. It's not good if it's a bull market. You can make money either way. Last week, I made really good money on a bear market. I smelled the end of it, and I turned around and took bull positions, very risky bull positions. So this week, last week, I made hundreds of dollars on a few dollars, and this week, I'm going to do the same on the other side. You don't use sentimental feelings, you use judgment, and you don't try to ride a wind too far. In other words, it's going up and I'm just going to keep holding on. No, you keep an eye on it. And the other thing is, don't fight a market. You run with it. That's how you are going to win, is not being a lone wolf. Well, I'm going to stand up to them sharks. I'm going to walk out there and tell them who's boss. No, they're going to eat you. You go with them, and you get in as fast as you can, because right now it's too late for you to take advantage of this bull market. Right now, it's already underway. You're just going to put money in probably right about when the bulls decide it's time to quit. That's how bad it is. It's kind of depressing that way, but, you know, that's how it happens. We see here that, good grief, this is a nice day. The market is closed. It tipped over a little bit. I'm a little bothered. Do you see how that spark chart lost its momentum there in the very last half hour, 15 minutes? Do you see how all three of these came over a little bit? That's a little concern to me. I'm going to watch the post-market, and then if it looks like the post and pre don't have a lot of excitement, I'm getting the hell out. Because I'm not going to wait for everyone else to run by me before I realize that there's a T-Rex after us with a bear head. But right now, we're in a good time. Now, here's the other odd thing. Crude oil is easing back nicely. Now, that will indicate that we will probably have gas prices going back down. Remember I mentioned we had oil got up to almost 90 a barrel on the Brent Light Sweet, and now, so look what happened. Gasoline prices went up around here from about 369 to 389, around that territory. Now they'll turn the other way. Maybe not instantly. Sometimes it takes a few days through the supply chain, but it'll turn the other way. So that's some good news there. What's weird here is gold and silver were both up. Commodities, there was buying in those commodities. Crude was a commodity, it was down. But look at this, 10-year bond. Now what we see here is yield. Yield is inverse to price. So the yield was going down, that means the price was going up. That means investors were buying bonds. But they were also buying equities. Money going into equities. Now usually, if money is going into equities, it's going out of bonds. They're moving away from the safe harbor. Here, equity, there was money going into stocks. There was money going into commodities, for God's sake, and money going into bonds. Where was that coming from? Probably from money markets. When there's a lot of uncertainty, big investors will oftentimes, or you don't know which direction things are going, large investors will put their money into cash. We call it cash. It's like money market. As a matter of fact, money markets, you can write checks out of them. You can get a debit card for it. It's like that's your sort of like your storage bin, and then you can pull it out and put it into things. That was what was going on for weeks and weeks. Now, the money's coming out. They're pulling it out. They're throwing it at stocks, throwing it at bonds, throwing it at commodities. It is a good sign that investors, the heavies, are shaking off their concerns and they're seeing at least daylight ahead. That's good news for you. Internships, jobs, careers, and all that, we may be pulling out of this recession faster than you think. There is some data out there that although the official numbers are showing that inflation is still seriously difficult, it looks like it's going to turn the other way here within the next couple of months. It's back numbers that are not typically available, but there seems to be the numbers that say the inflation problem is going to be whipped very soon. That, of course, has political implications, but it also, more importantly, it has implication for what will be constitute the market's reactions. What does that say? Possibly bull market coming up, but I'm not going to give up on the bears just quite yet, because they still might have some room to play. Don't ever think that a bull market isn't a place where bears can kill you, and they can in this market. Here's the odd thing that I saw. Look over here at the foreign markets. London, just in a bad, foul mood, dropped on the opening bell. The bulls tried to pull it out, and the bears smacked them down. Bulls tried again, there by the bell, the closing bell. The bears had taken over again. So London is certainly not a good place right now. Tokyo, which was open before London, started out in a really bitchy mood, and then it just stayed down there. You see there at the end, interestingly enough, the bulls were trying to pull back up in the last hours of trading in Tokyo, and then the bell rang. By the time the sun was rising over here in London, the bears were back in charge, at least in England. Now, England is in a political transition right now, and that might be why there's some problem. They're not acting like the rest of the world. But they just got a new prime minister who is, again, one that most people would not want, but just like Boris Johnson, and probably a puppet of Russia, just like Johnson was. And so, London is a little concerned right now, and that might be unusual to London. What am I thinking here? I mean, you know, this is one of those times when, and I do want to keep exposing you to stocks just to see what's going on. Now, a bull market isn't always for every company or for every sector a bull market. For example, if you were to look over here at Exxon, XOM, it had a bad day. A bull market, Exxon has a bad day. I mean, it was down rather badly. I mean, damn. Okay, look at Marathon. Okay, maybe it was just Exxon. Let's look at another company, different size, definitely, from Exxon. They had a bad day. So in other words, you can have whole sectors that are bearish in a bull market. And you can have whole sectors that are bullish in a bear market. So I'm trying to point out here that you do have, don't think that, well, I can buy anything in a bull market. That was actually the case for a long time. And time has passed now. The markets are much more likely to reward companies that really do show signs or industries that are really exciting, and they will punish the industries that are not. If you look at retail, let's look at Target. Oh, nice day. 4.5% up, good day. Okay, with that, let's look at Kohl's. KSS, good day. Look at it. They're even about up, about the same percentage. So in other words, retail would be one of the industries that will benefit from a recovering economy. I go to Target and buy when I'm feeling like I just got a check, even if I can't afford stuff. So in other words, retail, like, you know, apparel, household items, they tend to let you know, especially if they're a little more upscale, like Target and Kohl's, if they're a little more upscale, they'll show you that they're one of the favorites of the heavy buyers. So always keep that in mind when you're looking at these. Now look at Kohl's though. Here's one of those where beta is telling you that this is risky AF. I mean, that's a high beta. But the price earnings ratio is a pussycat. This is a stock that I would say, if I'm doing technical analysis, I would say this has a lot of room on the upside. The PE ratio is way low, so that price has room on the upside for a little bit of a trot. Especially with a high-risk stock, a price appreciation can get magnified pretty nicely. So this could be, if you're a technical analyst, there are first impressions on this one that it is it's a play. Kohl's, I mean... would I do this? I'm not sure. I mean, that one's scary. With a beta that high, yeah, about that. But they do pay a dividend. And a beta that high on a company that pays a dividend, that's unusual. See, if a company doesn't pay a dividend, there's no safety net under you when you buy the stock. You're not going to get a dividend check in the mail. The only way you'll make money is if that stock goes up in price. So that's why companies that pay dividends tend to have lower PE ratios. Lower betas. They're safer for the investors because you get some money. Well, dividends aren't guaranteed, but you're pretty sure you're going to get a check in the mail. So even if the stock price doesn't go up too much, you're making a little money off it. But geez, I mean, this one's a little bit weird on that one. High beta, big dividend, low PE ratio. This is one, the first thing your alarm bell says, look at this. There's something going on here. It might be worth a play. That's how we think. And that's what I'm doing when I do these. Just talk to you about it, use our terminology, show you where the how the thinking process goes on. It's not throwing darts at a dartboard. It's not listening to Kramer. Use your own heads. You're bright, and you're better than the average student because you're my students. Notice, interestingly, volume was kind of on the light side. You see how the volume was only about 80% or so of what it has been on a typical day over the last year. So I don't know what that's telling me, but it actually makes me even more curious. And I hate that bid-ask spread. You would buy this stock for $27.83 a share. Instantly, you would have a value of $29.65 a share. Do you see how you're in the hole? The minute you buy this stock, you've lost money. That's the way it is. Now, that's a hell of a bid-ask spread. That's a 26 cent on a $30 stock. That's an awful big bid-ask spread. Part of that is because the light trading volume. The heavier the trading volume, the more the bid-ask spread tends to tighten down a little bit. Well, it's at least sometimes. Hard to tell, though. I don't know. Enough of that, though. What was that I'm looking at? Kohl's, KSS. I have to remember that one. Anyway, enough of that. Let me take you over to the world of accounting here. Yeah. Yeah, that's annual. That's an annual. Now, the dividends are generally paid quarterly. It's sort of like bonds. If I told you that I bought an 8% bond, a bond, let's say, I don't know, some corporation, a CVS 4% bond, what that, and it matures, let's say, in 2032. What that means is that for the next 10 years, every year I'm going to get 4% of $1,000. So I'll get a check for $40 in the mail, but actually I'll get two $20 checks. They pay them semi. And then at the end, in 2032, I'll get one last coupon, as we call them, and I'll get my $1,000 back. That's how bonds work, and I'll teach you all about bonds. You might be able to see right away that they are super safer than stocks. You don't know what's going to happen. A stock could be to the moon or could be zero tomorrow. But with a bond, we call it a fixed income investment because you get a coupon check. It is a guarantee. If they don't send you your check, you, as a debt holder, can turn the company off legally. You can do that. But then, at the end, you get your $1,000 back. So bonds don't deviate much from $1,000 par value. They are not wild up and down and up and down. They stay stable. And so why don't we hear so much about bonds? Because they are not sexy. A big bond move might be a couple of dollars on a thousand. But believe it or not, the bond market is 10 times the size of the stock market. It is a vast, it's not even oceans, it's planets of money goes to bonds and trades in bonds all the time. Why? Because these ginormous corporations, life insurance companies, trust funds, pension funds, they're not allowed to invest in stocks because stocks are risky, put the money at risk. Bond markets are stable, so vast oceans of money flow to bonds. As a matter of fact, they are so easy for a company to borrow money if it's a large creditworthy corporation. Investment banking houses don't even charge them a float fee to do the issue. It's that serious. And we'll talk about them because even though they are not sexy and you're not going to make $1 million in a day off them, They're actually very intelligent investments, especially when an economy is getting into trouble. Flight to quality. You sell your stupid stocks and you buy bonds. You go to the safe harbor. And also, did you know, and I hate to tell you this, but did you know that someday you're going to be a very old person? You're going to be old, bitchy, mean, and rich. Okay? I don't want to depress you, but there's the reality of it. As you get older, you're not going to want risky investments. You're not going to have the time to recover from a bad hit on your investments. That's why as people, couples, households, individuals get older, they tend to flow toward bonds and away from stocks just because they don't need the aggravation of watching their whole investment, their whole retirement go to hell. So that's one of those things is that in an you're getting a great education here, so you can smell when things are going to get bad. That's you're educated. You can tell. Well, I know this new president we got, he's going to send us to hell. No, you know better than to act like that. You know to look at the numbers. You know to look at the business side, not at politics or some idiot on TV. So if you smell an economy that's turning for the right reasons, you're thinking it, you go to bonds. You get out before the hell breaks loose. And if you see a recovery coming, you don't need the news, the talking heads to tell you that. You don't need some conspiracy theory weirdo to tell you that. You know it for yourself, and you can buy in early. Move back from bonds to stocks. That's why we do this. And that's why bonds are part of your investment considerations at any given time. And especially if you're in a corporation, corporations issue bonds. Debt is cheaper than equity for a company. You pay a lower rate on debt than you do on stock. And the big reasons for that, and one of those I'll talk about today, one is debt, when someone lends money to a corporation, buys the corporation's bond, that lender has prior claim over stockholders. That you have to pay the bills, the debts first, before the stockholders can get anything. The other reason debt is cheaper than equity is because interest is tax deductible. I minus the interest expense, that coupon I paid to someone before I calculate taxes. So that makes debt super cheaper. And dividends, I mean, you're basically throwing money away, giving out dividends, because you got taxed on the money, and then you're going to send it to your shareholders, and they're going to get taxed on that money as dividend income. The question is, why do companies even pay dividends? Well, there are reasons, and I'll explain those later. It's called, the best way to explain it is it's part of a something in, that comes out of engineering called signal theory. It signals the ability of the corporation to burn money. Like, for example, I am your old uncle. You didn't know that, did you? Now I'm your, I mean, some people say I'm kind of a funny uncle, but, you know, but I give you, you know, nothing every Christmas. And then one Christmas, I give you a $1,000 check. And then I give a $1,000 check to my lovely niece. And I give to you $200. You are such a disappointment. No. The thing, though, is what I'm saying here is, do you see how I'm signaling my wealth by doing that? I have seen this in corporations. I was a consultant for a big, powerful, what was called an alphabet house. I'll explain those later. But they invited me to the Christmas party because I'd been sort of like part of the company for several months. They had a really strong year. They had a lavish layout of all this food. I mean, I was these little lamb chops, I was putting them in my pockets and things like that. And then the president of the company, the CEO and president, gets up, ting, 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 with a glass. And he talks about how incredible the revenues were, the profit was. And then he takes this ginormous cigar. It looked like it was a submarine. And he, the son of a bitch, lit it with a $100 bill. I thought, I had never seen that before. He went there. And he lights it. Oh, yes, it was a very good year. And he tosses the $100 bill in an ashtray. And I'm over there like, signaling. He was letting everyone know that he could do that. That's what dividends are. They're like a message that we are stable enough that we think you deserve a... We could take all the money and plow it back into the company, our profit. But we're so well off. We're doing so well. Here's your dividend. That's what dividends often are. I'm getting off track here. Let me get back onto track. I'm putting off going into accounting. Let me be clear on this, and I've probably said this before. As much as I tell jokes about accountants, and then the accounting faculty says hurtful things to me from a distance, the reality is that accounting is the foundation of civilizations, most. As a matter of fact, the entire basis of Western civilization was accounting. Let me explain. Back before there was writing, agriculture had taken hold. Herding of animals, domestication for meats and fibers, agriculture, the growing of crops of many kinds. And the large owners, they traded in markets, but they were, there wasn't like a distribution system like we have now. They would send, like for example, a herd of animals, sheep, oxen, things like that, to a place where a buyer would buy them. They would send, a wealthy landowner would say, my son, I want you to take these. And I've made the agreement for a certain number of sheep, a certain number of oxen. The way they did it originally was they made these little clay shapes, different types, a little circle, a little square, rectangles, triangles, you know, and they would make 12 sheep, 12 triangles, 12 oxen, 12 squares, and all that. And then they would put those little clay things into a jar, seal it, and then when the herdsman got to the other side to trade it, the buyer would smash the jar open and count. And then they thought, wait, why are we wasting jars? Literally, they said, what would it take to just take those shapes and press them into a tablet and then dry the tablet and send the tablet? When we go doing archaeology, and I have a close relative who is an archaeology grad student here, right here, they find all of these ancient tablets. And, oh, I see these in the movies. This is the secrets of the universe. If I read this, I will invoke a demon or something. Almost everything we find is nothing but an inventory or a receipt or a letter bitching about a short getting shorted in a delivery. It's accounting. The whole basis of civilization, writing systems, is accounting. It's the cuneiform, those tablets you see with all the little triangles and squares and all that. That's nothing but accounting. It was based upon counts of numbers for inventories, for counts of numbers for trading, for counts of, and in some cases we find them for sales receipts. For God's sake, a sales receipt was the basis of a civilization. Accounting is important, but it gets more important, interesting than that. The Black Plague wiped out between a quarter and a third of the people of Europe. And it was brutal. It was awesome. But one thing we know, it always happens after a mass wipeout, a decrop of a population, the people who survive want to party. It sounds weird, but it happens. In the 1400s, after the plague had passed, you started seeing bizarre things happening. All these people who used to walk around in miserable tunics They started tying them, showing their shapes of their bodies. They started getting a taste. I don't want to eat that. I want to try something new. And so, as a result of that, explorers started going places to try to find things to bring back, to excite people, to make them buy. There were a couple of explorers. One of them was a famous poet named Geoffrey Chaucer. He managed to find his way down to Rome, which was dangerous as hell because of all the bandits in the Alps. But he got down there, and when he came back, everyone said, well, it's what was it like? It was all ruins, right? He said, no. Everything is alive. They've got literature, and it's about things that we don't talk about. Literature was supposed to be about religious things. These people were writing about romance, sex, murder, love, betrayal. It's all, and all these artists doing these things where it's not people sitting praising the Lord with halos. They're drawing human figures. And there's these sculptors who are showing human forms, nude, for God's sake. And the clothing, they're wearing pants and tight things that show the shape of the human body. It's not shameful. And then they brought back foods and spices from Asia, and everyone went just freaking crazy. And then Christopher Columbus comes along, hey, I'd like to go to Asia the other way. Of course, he didn't know there was a ginormous continent and islands in the way, but when he came back, look what I found. And everyone just went bonkers. However, that required capital, investment. Now, interestingly enough, we think of the kings and queens paying that. No, it was the rich families, the guilds, and all of those things that were financing it. They wanted to make profit. They said, okay. Matter of fact, Christopher Columbus, one of his three ships, most people don't know it, was capitalized by a rich man. And as a matter of fact, Christopher Columbus's brother went to this guy and said, look, you give us money and we will bring you back stuff that will make a fortune for you. Well, the guy didn't quite trust him. He said, no, I'll give you a ship, but I'm going to command one of them. I can't remember. I think it was the Pinta that was his ship on this voyage. Okay, the rich families. All these explorers were coming to them saying, well, here's our idea. And the rich families said, okay, that's nice, but what kind of numbers are you talking about? That was a little bit of a problem, except that there was an odd thing that had happened in Italy. There was a monk. He had a lifetime vow of silence. He was bored as hell, and so he invented a double ledger accounting system. In fact, that's the one we use to this day. His name was Pacioli, and he took hold. The families with the money, they said, I want to see Pacioli's. Literally, Pacioli's. Financial statements in a regularized double ledger form with rules governing what you could put in each place. Along the each row, along the lines, accounting, and once these explorers started doing it that way, once entrepreneurs started writing accounting projections, accounting statements for what they'd already done, then the family said, "We'll invest because those don't look so good compared to these. In the same rules, look better. We'll invest in this." Accounting drove the age of exploration, for God's sake. And then, of course, from that came the Industrial Revolution. And those accounting numbers were required. Whenever the rich people wanted to invest, they said, I need your financials. I hate to say it, but accounting is the basis of where we are now. We rose from the age of exploration to the Renaissance to the Industrial Revolution. We rocked through the 20th century so that we could be here now and play stupid games on our smartphones. That's right. That's where we've gone. Anyway, so when I make my crude remarks about accounting, you have to appreciate it is everything to us. In our world, in finance, we use the accounting statements. We're an information constituent of the accountants. We have to adjust them in very significant ways, and that's just how we have to do it. But we start with those numbers. Then we have to really twist them around. Now I'm going to go through, I'm not going to beat you up with income statement, balance sheet, line by line, blah, blah, blah. That you've already had your accounting class. You had your accounting, right? Okay. So you're in your post-traumatic stress syndrome phase right now, recovering, and it's cool. I understand you're still a little sensitive to it. When I say accounting, you say debit, credit. No, we'll get you past that. But I'm not going to beat you up with the line by line. Well, show me that you know how to calculate a net income. That's not how I do it. That's not our purpose here. That's why we hire accountants. That, I mean, you know, they have to have some reason to live. So I did it. I promised myself I wouldn't do that here in this lecture. Okay. But what I'm going to do is I'm going to present the accounting knowledge in a somewhat different way than from how you saw it in accounting. We see those financial statements in a different light. We know we're going to have to fix them. We know we're going to have to pull numbers out and put numbers in. But the very beginning, you remember somewhere early in accounting, they say a balance sheet is a stock and the income statement is a flow. That kind of the reservoir and the rivers that go into it. Well, here's the thing is that the center of everything is the balance sheet. And all of the other statements, the income statement, the statement of cash flows, the statement of retained earnings, What's the one I'm forgetting? Statement of retainers, statement of cash flows. Will someone help me here for God's sake? I'm sundowning. Come on. Stockholders' equity is one. There's another one though. What is it? Don't do that. You're possessed. No. There are all these little statements. I don't want to hear about them. Get away from me. For heaven's sakes. What's the one I'm forgetting? Oh, God. Anyway, now there's another one here that I do remember. It's very little emphasis is put on it. I learned in my consulting years that it is a weapon that is hardly ever noticed. It's the notes to the financial statement. The notes. Where I found out about you can weaponize it, and where I found out about this was when I was helping companies that were going public and companies that were already public that wanted to get a listing, a trading symbol on the NASDAQ. And I'd have to send these, the people who did that approval, compliance, all these financial statements and all that. I had this one lady, her name was Claire, and she said, listen to me. I was making these financial statements myself for these filings. And she said, listen, in the notes to the financial statement are all of the details. And in the details is the devil. You disclose everything. Notes show the compensations, notes show why the stock popped. Did it go up because it was a sale of stock, or did it go up because you gave stock to an executive? It's all in there, everything about the company. In the notes, you can even warn investors, potential investors, that this is probably going to go to hell, that these financial statements are based on assumptions that you really shouldn't make for this company. You can say it there so that no one can come back and say, you lied to us. No, I didn't. Those numbers misled us. No, they didn't. Look in the notes. Well, we don't look at the notes. Well, then stop bitching because you didn't look at where we explained this. That's why the notes are something that, like I said, you can weaponize. In these companies, these were dangerous as hell to invest in. These were small cap, barely alive companies. And so I would simply put it in, the last note. These financial statements have been prepared in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles consistently applied, including the assumption that this firm is a going concern, which may not be appropriate for an investment of this type. And potential investors are cautioned that the going concern assumption may be incorrect or inappropriate. You say it right there in the notes, for God's sake. And then no one can come back because you said it. So those notes are kind of a hidden little treasure. But here's the thing. All of these statements, they're just side calculations that go here. The statement of cash flows. That cash at the bottom, that's the number that goes here. The accounts receivable, the payables, all those are in the statement of cash flows. That's where they originate. And then once you've got them there, you consolidate into the balance sheet. And that's why they call it the consolidated balance sheet. The state income statement, that flows over here, down here to the statement of retained earnings. And then that giant block goes into the balance sheet. Everything is done so that you can have a balance sheet. Essentially, the balance sheet is the last thought. Here's everything as a summary. So we take advantage of that in finance because the balance sheet on its own isn't telling us how that number happened. These numbers right here help us get that. Now, terminology. Well, that's the latest it's been today. You'll hear me, and we'll do this on Monday. I used older terminology. Now, I'm not trying to teach you how to be old geezers, but in the business world, you'll hear income statement. That's profit and loss. P&L, net income. That's profit. Operating income, Op Inc. or EBIT. Earnings before taxes. You'll hear me call that pre-tax. These older terms are what's still used in the business world. So the more you use that terminology, the more you begin to integrate into your corporation and the way of thinking they do. That's just how we work it in our world. Now, you guys have an exam, a quiz,